Episode two, I love it.
Episode two, would we get 30 people listen to our first episode?
Let's double it.
If that doubles every week.
We're going to retire soon.
It's funny. I keep getting, I got an email from another guy who's like a former pastor. Today he emailed me and he was like, hey, I'm starting a podcast. Will you listen to it? A lot of people are starting podcasts.
Add it to the list. I'm not saying no.
No, bring on more podcasts, more podcasts.
So listen, I think I guess this would be Tuesday night's episode this week, episode two of The People versus O.J. Simpson, I thought was riveting. And I was shocked. So I guess we should probably start by filling people in just quickly on what the episode was, just to bring everybody up to speed. So basically, episode two revolved around the Bronco chase, right?
Yeah.
OJ's police. The police and the DA look like morons, right? They
I mean, they don't even look that much like morons. They think they look like morons. I personally thought they keep saying, like, this is the worst day of my life, worse than the day I had cancer. And I'm like, a guy jumped out the back door into a Bronco and fled. Like, it's not the first time somebody's fled the cops.
And it's not like you don't know where they are. They're on TV in a Bronco.
Yeah, within minutes they found him. And I don't know. It was a weird – I think definitely one of the things they're showing is how at that time everybody in L.A. was in cahoots. Like, cops partied at O.J.'s house and prosecutors hung out with cops and defense attorneys like Shapiro – like partied with cops, like everybody was a little posse.
Yeah.
You know, and I will say that like my own experience in the legal system, like in the divorce family court legal system in Minnesota, it's totally true.
Oh yeah.
Everybody knows everybody. They're all like, they used to be law partners and now they're custody evaluators. And like everybody knows everybody, not with the cops so much, but that does not seem to me far-fetched at all. And part of the reason they got in trouble was they gave Shapiro a really long leash, you know, like, hey, bring him in when he's ready and, you know, this kind of thing.
Which I find interesting because, taking a sidetrack just a little bit, I mean, in the world right now, if you pay any attention to sports, that conversation's going on with LeSean McCoy, right?
Mm-hmm.
LeSean McCoy?
No.
With who am I thinking about with the – with the Eagles?
Johnny Manziel?
No.
I don't know what's which pro athletes are currently in trouble. I can't keep up.
Yeah, so anyway, these public conversations are will he be charged or if so, will he turn himself in? Oh yeah, arrest warrants expected soon, an incident involving Buffalo Bills running back LeSean McCoy. So these conversations, whether or not there's going to be a warrant, if there is, will he turn himself in and how long does he have and all that kind of stuff. So to your point, this stuff goes on all the time.
Yeah.
It just doesn't involve – it doesn't usually involve a Heisman-winning running back.
Well, you know, speaking of that, the one thing about – I wouldn't call it riveting this episode. I would call it, for me – I call it uncomfortably terrifying.
Okay.
Here's what's interesting to me, and you know, we're always going to be kind of looking for the spiritual, broadly speaking, in these shows that we're talking about.
Yeah.
And it's interesting, you know, this I bring up Johnny Manziel, but this week, you know, Johnny Manziel's dad, like, said in an interview. Unless they get him help, he won't see his 24th birthday.
That's the ultimate throwing somebody under the bus, right?
Yeah. Yeah. And it's almost like, hey, man, like, it's not my problem now. Even though I'm the dad, like, yeah, I've tried to get this guy in treatment and to stop beating his girlfriend. Now it's the NFL's problem. Like, who's they in that equation, right?
Yeah.
And all I could think of as I watched this episode was about mental illness. I was like, this is a mentally ill guy. Last week I talked about, you know, what happens when a guy who's kind of from the wrong side of the tracks gets a ton of wealth and fame, and can he handle it? But for OJ, there's obviously like something. It's not just because he came from poverty, you know, and he was given all the money and women and adulation and movie roles. Like, there was something else broken inside of him.
Do you think, I'm wondering if, I think this is an interesting conversation. So I'm wondering if, whether or not it's something was broken inside of him or all of that broke him. Because, I mean, that's a very LA thing, right? To come out here and have popularity and success and fame. And they're like, people say it goes to your head. I mean, I wonder if there's not more to that than we are willing to recognize, that that sudden onslaught breaks you or tweaks something that you makes you different.
I mean, what's there's so many interesting subtexts and like rabbit holes we could follow. And one is this constant appearance in these early episodes of the Kardashian kids, like another like quintessential LA story of people who maybe don't have, didn't come from money, but they became very wealthy and became very famous and then cracked, like some of them have cracked publicly, right? Yeah. But I also, here's what's interesting to me. You tell me you're, you know what, 10 years younger than me. So tell me if you remember this, but like, I have no recollection of the gun. I remember all of it. I remember like the slow speed chase, the highways being clear, the news.
I remember the gun. Yeah. That didn't jump out to me.
And I don't know if I repressed that memory or whatever, because I'm like, he didn't have a gun. He has a gun to his head. He has a gun in his mouth. But then you hear the footage of like Tom Brokaw, historical footage saying, you know, and OJ has a gun and whatever. And I think, oh crap, like that was a big part of it, that he had a gun.
Yeah. And I think there's even, I would get to that thing about Tom Brokaw in a minute, but I think why I say riveting for the episode was, and it was a deeply uncomfortable episode, I think you're right about that, is for it to be about the Bronco chase, we were in the Bronco relatively little in the show, which I think made it so great. It would have been easy just to hang out in there, you know, kind of build that, oh, look at OJ's breaking down, but we're not in there a lot. And it's all that other stuff that was so interesting.
God, it was so claustrophobic though when we were in there.
Yeah. But so again, with Tom Brokaw, I was sitting there and thinking of questions that I had for you as I was watching it. We're never going to know what that feels like ever again to have something happen and it so dominate the public consciousness and what we have access to. Right. I mean, I thought it was great. They broke the NBA finals. Right.
Yeah.
Just to show that stuff. Right. That's never going to happen again.
It's probably not. I'll tell you, because there's such a difference between the OJ monopoly on the airwaves and the 9/11 monopoly. Because when 9/11 happened and we were all riveted, we're like, holy crap, this implicates me.
Like right. This,
and when OJ, it was like almost pure voyeurism.
Yeah.
You know, if you're sitting in Minnesota and watching this car chase, slow motion car chase on news helicopters, you're like, wow, that's crazy. But it doesn't like, I'm not scared that the Mall of America is going to be next. And that, you know, that's the difference between 9/11, I think. So I wonder if there will ever be, I mean, why do you say that? Why do you think something will never capture our consciousness?
I think part of it is, the industrial, so the nature of the entertainment industry and news industry, because it is an industry. I mean, we have access to how many networks and channels that are nothing but news, right? So if we want to kind of plug into any kind of story, then we know where we can go. But I don't think it's ever going to break into ESPN, right? Or, you know, these other networks. I mean, it would have to be, like you said, a 9/11, something of national.
Yeah.
Again, because the other question I have is, do celebrities command that much attention anymore? Like, if, you know, with Manziel or Ray Rice, you know, or whatever, it really wasn't mainstream news, really, like the way this was.
No, but like if Peyton Manning snapped next week and took his wife hostage, it'd be every channel.
Do you think?
Yeah, I do.
Well, hostage is different. If he takes her hostage, that's different. If he kills her.
You're splitting hairs now. I do think there are certain – and it's again, it's hard for us 20 years later to – now that he's just like an overweight jailbird to remember what a national figure O.J. Simpson was, like a national treasure, you know?
Yeah.
And really one of the first black athletes to reach mega superstardom and then to go from athletics into movies.
Yeah, that crossover. And there's precious few people who've done that.
Oh, yeah, right. That's what I'm saying. Like, it's,
well, I count them on one hand.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. So what did you think about that? You see these little glimpses of – I think his name is Chris Darden, who ends up joining the prosecution.
Yeah. And
he's like, I don't know, living in Compton or South Central or, you know, one of those neighborhoods in L.A. with a big African-American population, small houses with like a cyclone fence between each yard, you know, and everyone's out barbecuing. And
I thought it was great.
The neighbors talk about O.J.'s our hero, you know, and you're starting to see the race issue starting to bubble up.
But there's
that comment that he says of like, you know, Jim Brown became an activist.
Yeah.
And like, where's the playgrounds named after OJ? When OJ got rich, he got white.
Yeah. So I thought that you anticipated my next question. I think what the series feels like it's up to at the moment is setting the table for that discussion. I'll be very disappointed if the remaining episodes, that's not a key or leading theme in the show, not just the factual, this is what happened, here are the Kardashians. I think it's setting the table or has the potential to open up a really interesting conversation about race, because that's one of the questions I asked myself as I was watching it was, what is this episode saying to me about race and issues of race in America? Because there was those conversations, and then when Cochran tells the guy what was Leonard's only crime, it was the color of his skin. So I think there's going to be – hopefully there's something down the road where we continue this part of the conversation.
There's definitely – I mean, from that opening montage we talked about last week where it sets the tone of, like, racial tensions in Los Angeles. But there's also this – it's going to be fascinating because at a certain point, OJ or somebody – is going to decide Cochran over Shapiro. And right, every time it cuts to Cochran, it's about race, right? Yeah. And they're like foreshadowing Cochran's involvement by these brief cutaways. Meanwhile, Shapiro is like, I got to cover my ass. Let's have a press conference. We don't know where he is. It's not my fault. I've worked with the cops for a long time. Then it cuts to Cochran. He's like, when you're a defense attorney, all you do, like, your client is all you care about. You don't save your own skin.
Yeah.
It's setting up this, I mean, in probably less nuanced than it really was in real life, but it's setting up these two very divergent defense teams for OJ. And obviously we know how it ends, but it's going to be fascinating to see how it unfolds. And if OJ, it'll be interesting to see too if OJ buys the race argument when Cochran presents it to him.
Well, I can't wait.
How much of a pawn OJ even is, like, because let's go back to the car driving around and that guy AC, you know, this sycophantic follower who even owns a white. That was one of the craziest things. Like, that's a different Bronco. White Bronco.
Yeah.
This guy bought the same car. He like goes by his first initials. And he's screaming at OJ, like, make a decision. What do you want me to do? And OJ is incapable of doing anything other than say, I want to see mama, you know?
Yeah. Well, I think that's also an interesting, and we can talk about this next week if we want. This show's great because it clearly illustrates how we, and I mean, like, every level of society uses superstars, right? Uses athletes. For whatever we want. So there's this issue of race. Like, is Cochran going to use OJ? Is Shapiro using OJ? Right? Is AC is using OJ? Bob Kardashian, right? All these guys, and for different reasons. And I think that that might be something worth exploring, or at least paying attention to as it continues.
Yeah, I really, you look at a guy like AC and you think, anybody who's like, why doesn't he drive OJ to the hospital? Why doesn't he drive OJ to the police station? Why doesn't he do what's
taking on? Well, I mean, I say that, yeah. I don't know what I would have done, but
you know, like, this guy is clearly having a complete mental health crisis. And the guy sitting in the front seat is like, where do you want me to take you? What do you want me to do?
Yeah.
And you're like, are you kidding me? How can you be so absorbed in his celebrity that you can't see that he's not a celebrity right now? He's a he's a mental patient.
Yeah.
And he needs help. Yeah, he needs help.
I thought, and when they finally do get him home, I thought the shot was beautifully composed where he sits on the couch. And he's on the phone, and the cops and detectives are on each side of him, and they kind of slowly zoom in.
He's like, "Can I have a glass of orange juice?"
Yeah,
that's.
And the detective's like, "Of course, OJ."
I know. It's crazy.
He'll give him what he wants. Like,
how do they not throw him down on the ground?
Cuff him,
and yeah. Like he's a witness in a double murder.
Yeah. He's a suspect at that point. I mean, they said he was a suspect.
I mean, suspect, right. Like, the only suspect. Yeah, I kept thinking, like, obviously the race issue is going to be front and center as the show goes on, but I'm really going to be interested to see, like, how the mental health.
I fear that that's just going to be completely left behind.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Like, in the last episode, there was a psychiatrist, was one of the people who even got on the phone with the cops, and he's like, "Hey, man, I don't want to lose my license over this."
Yeah.
But again, even when the psychiatrist was called by Shapiro, it was like a cover your ass move, like in case we have to plead
this.
We got this guy. And
yeah.
We do the lie detector for this. Like, it's not about let's take care of OJ's mental health.
You know? Let's build our case.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Cool. So I think it's – well, I mean, I'm going to keep watching for that as we look into the future episodes of that mental health thing. And I fear you're right that it will just be pushed by the wayside.
We don't talk about that, right? I mean, it's not something we talk about.
Yeah.
So yeah, I think two episodes in, I think I'm fully committed to the show.
Yeah,
I think in ways that I hadn't expected to be. So I think if people are seeing this podcast or listening to it or hear about the show and are suspicious or skeptical, that I think you should give it a shot because it's really good.
Yeah, jump onto FX now and watch the first couple episodes and catch up. Yeah. All right. Well, that's it for Killer Cereals.
Number two,
man. Let's go for 60 listeners.
Can't wait for number three.
All right.
All right. Later, man.